Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 181, recorded on June 12th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going awesomely well. Yes, and despite the fact that you're dealing with tornadoes and I'm dealing with forest fires.
Yeah. Yeah, we're starting a little late today, as if anybody would know. But yeah, I was in the basement for a while. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast and his car. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How are you? How's camping?
Yep. Camping's great. Apologies for the phone quality, but hey, we're roughing it here.
Yeah. Hey, that's how I did back in the day. That's how I streamed the WWDC events. I did a couple of those, and I had someone call me, and that's how I streamed it. So, hey, if it works for that, then it'll work for this, right?
Hopefully. Wow.
All right. So, we have a lot to talk about, because Apple actually spoke about real things that it's doing, which is always exciting. Of course, the Worldwide Developers Conference is currently happening in San Francisco. Monday was the keynote, the big keynote day, and the rest of the days and events are under NDA because that's the only thing that's public. But they gave us a lot to talk about, and since we just do iOS and stuff, we're gonna stick to iOS 7. But they did have the new Mac Pro and Mac OS X Mavericks as well. So if you haven't heard about it yet, check it out. But iOS 7 was announced, previewed, and we got a lot of information about it. First obvious big change, of course, is a totally new UI.
Yet still familiar.
Yes, exactly. So not totally new, but certainly the biggest change, as Tim Cook said, the biggest change since the original iPhone, because it is significantly different, and it's very, as the rumors predicted, also divisive and in its look. Some people don't like it.
That's true. I'm actually okay with it. It'll take a little bit of adjusting because it is different enough from what we have right now.
Yeah.
But so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it was, as we've heard in the past, Johnny Ive was the head of the team trying to integrate his hardware designs into the new UI, where they have indeed removed, I would say, almost all elements of skeuomorphism from it. It relies heavily on translucence. So why don't we start with the lock screen? And the fact is there's no slide to unlock. Well, the slide to unlock is still there. It still says slide to unlock, but the little...
The skeuomorphic element is gone from it.
Was that a skeuomorphic element? It was a little... digital bar thing that you slid
the
across
slider.
The screen.
Slider's gone.
Yeah, it looked like a physical slider.
Yeah. Yeah, so that part is gone. And so now I guess you push the entire screen over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, honestly, as we go, this is going to be the theme, which is I think that some of these changes make the phone less obvious how you use certain things. For example, the slide to unlock, it was very obvious that you grabbed the thing that had the arrow and you push it over. Now it just says slide to unlock on a screen with the background, and of course the clock is up at the top. What's your take on that, Jeff?
I think people will be okay with it because slide to unlock is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So I think there are other elements that people may get confused with, because they're just not exactly sure what to do or how to navigate.
Right.
But I think the slide to unlock is okay.
Yeah, I think people will figure it out pretty quickly. I think the first thing is going to be, well, where's the thing? And it says slide to unlock, and they'll maybe have to play with it for a few moments, and then they'll realize that you just have to push the entire screen over in the same direction that you did previously with the little arrow.
Right.
So in addition to the new lock screen, okay, well, on the new lock screen, you can pull up Notification Center, which
is cool. And it's been redesigned.
It has been redesigned. It has three different tabs now. It has a Today, All, and Missed. So the Today is very Google Now-like. It has some natural language sort of stuff, like, you know, today it's going to be mostly sunny. It's 70 and the high will be 77, and some calendar appointments will say, you know, like take Marty to the vet is coming up in 50 minutes or whatever. And it will have a day calendar right below that, as well as all of your, the notifications that came in today, which is, I'd say, pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I like the idea. I get a lot of notifications. So I like the idea of having my notifications grouped so that I can look at the ones that matter to me at this moment.
Mm-hmm. I would say that I would bet the ones, the sections that people will look at most will be the Today and the Missed.
I agree.
Because Missed is, and nobody cares about the incredibly old notifications that you got a week ago. And I'd say that's even more of an issue on OS X than it is on iOS, but I'm very frequently going through and clearing a lot of them. It didn't look like there was a way to clear all notifications. It still seems that you have to press the little X to the right of it to clear that stuff. But I think that the ability to see Missed is going to be very useful, and it will likely end up being that all is sort of the archive of your messages, and you'll just ignore it and maybe not even mess with clearing your notifications out unless you're really crazy about it.
Do you clear your notifications?
Yeah, on occasion I do. So if I'm looking for some extra stuff to screw around with in bed in the morning when I'm supposed to be doing other things, I might go through and clear them.
I'm fanatical about it.
Yeah?
It drives me nuts having those in there, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the cool things about it is they're actually syncing the notifications across your devices, so you don't have to worry about... So if you have the same apps on your iPad and your iPhone, when you clear the notifications on one device, it clears them on all of them.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah. So the Springboard, the home screen, has also been redesigned. The status bar at the top where you see your cellular connection and the time and all that stuff has sort of been extended up. So everything, there's no black bar behind it. So your background and all of your content goes underneath that. You get dynamic wallpapers. I guess currently there are two dynamic wallpapers that, so there are some bubbles that sort of move around a little bit in
the
background. Yeah,
it's a very subtle thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to really be looking at it. And there is parallax movement. And for those who don't understand what that means, it's the icons are layered in front of your wallpaper. And so when you... It actually tracks your motion. So if you tilt your phone back and forth, you can actually see the icons moving a little bit faster in front of the wallpaper. So you can actually effectively move the icons back and forth and see more of your wallpaper. It adds a nice feel of depth. And that's one of those things that they've attempted to do overall with iOS 7 is provide more depth using the parallax, as well as using a lot of translucence with the panels that you get.
Yeah, it's subtle eye candy, but it's still really neat.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody said yet if you can how to power if you can create your own dynamic wallpapers.
I have not heard about that, Jeff. Have you?
I have not heard, but I've been doing a little bit of research, and I believe it is possible.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder what sort of format they're using for that. It would be interesting if they're using maybe like a core image type file or something like that. However, you can sort of create your own dynamic wallpaper. It's not really dynamic. They actually call it panorama wallpaper, and that's exactly what it is. You can set panoramas as your background, and so when you move your phone around, it actually shows you the different portions of your panorama as you pan around relative to your starting position. So if you have
so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so if you have some like beach photos, that'd be really nice to put there, some landscapes and that sort of thing. I think they include some as well.
You know, I also think it could be kind of cluttered, meaning if you're people like us, where you have lots of applications and lots of folders on your iPhone,
mm-hmm.
your screen's already full of stuff. Having an image that just keeps moving and moving in the background as you're moving your phone around, I think that could be a little distracting.
Yeah, you may not want to set it to panorama if you get a little too distracted by that stuff.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm not going to be using panorama.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote down new alerts. I don't remember what that was about. Do you remember? No?
No.
Okay.
No.
New alerts.
Yeah, I don't remember. I guess,
One thing I read about related to the wallpaper that's kind of cool is the lock screen colors. If you set a security code, the edges of the little buttons will, I don't know if they shine through the color or if they adapt and sort of pick up the colors of whatever your background is, if that makes any sense. So the new buttons on the where you punch in your code are circular.
Yep.
But the rings around them will change color based on whatever your background, your lock screen and home screen backgrounds are.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's... They're doing two separate things. They're doing adaptive coloring of the UI based on the application. So as you're navigating through an interface, like the back and forward buttons and those sorts of things, they adapt a general color. But I think that maybe on the lock screen, you're probably picking up the just the color of the background because those panels are pretty translucent. And you can see that on the iOS page, the iOS 7 page on Apple's website. And I think that it's kind of cool when you press the buttons, it actually, it's like, it kind of looks like frosted glass.
Yeah, and everything that's behind whatever interface element you're interacting with blurs too.
Yeah, it looks really nice. And when you press those buttons, like on the lock screen, the effect is that they actually remove the circle so that the depression is actually just a showing of the background, which is a neat little effect. And I remember what I was going to say with the new alerts. The banners up at the top have been increased in height a bit. They're now black and flat. And some people don't like them. Although I was just reading a little bit ago that... in addition to the fact that supposedly Johnny Ive actually tapped Apple's advertising creative department to create the color schemes of the icons, I guess they... Oh, what was I going to say? I'm scrolling through this thing.
You're multitasking poorly.
I know. I'm poorly multitasking. What they said ultimately in this article is that a lot of what is seen in iOS 7, while the overall theme and look of everything and the direction they're headed in will not be changing. This is obviously why they're showing it to developers now, so they can adapt their applications to it. They do say that a lot of details are very likely to change before we see it come out this fall.
I hope so, because there's a lot of inconsistencies in the interface.
Yeah, there are quite a few inconsistencies. One of the, we've got some police going by. One of the big inconsistencies that I noticed is that with the back buttons, you know, if you go into mail and tap on a message and you're reading through it, there's a back button at the top to take you back to your list of messages. In iOS 7, they have now changed that to just words. And the overall statement from Apple was that the reason they're doing that is because they want to try to get rid of a lot of icons and buttons that don't make sense and switch over to actual words that say precisely what's going on. And I found that that's a really inconsistent message, because they do that in certain circumstances, but in other circumstances, like in Safari or with the new share button, which is totally different. Well, not totally, totally different. It's still a square with an arrow coming out of it, but it's much different looking. It's not, when I first saw it, I didn't understand what it was. There definitely is inconsistency in the messaging for the UI. And I would say that based on the fact that they don't even have the iPad version available, I would say that they're still working very hard on this interface.
I think
they said
so.
The iPad version would be next week, though, right? Or in a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so. Regardless, it's still going to take some time. If it was ready, then they would have it. So it seems that they're still in the throes of pulling it all together.
Yeah, and that icon is very, yeah, I would agree with you, it's very inconsistent. I think it's going to take people a little while. But I think overall, because you were talking about when we started the show, some of the differences, too, with the slide to unlock. I think all these things are sort of a one-time discovery thing, though.
Right, yeah, definitely.
In a lot of ways. Right?
Yeah, I would
like
say that a lot of them
figure
are.
Figure it out, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was looking at the Photos app, for example, when I was trying to assign a photo as wallpaper, it was really confusing to me how to do that. And I think it might have encountered some kind of bug as well that threw me off a bit. So let's get into the new features. And the first one, I would say that just about everything in iOS 7 takes care of what I jailbreak for at this point. So other than being able to tether without paying for it, it looks like they've taken care of everything, especially SB settings with what they're calling Control Center. So Control Center is, I would say, 10 times better than SB settings because it gives you a lot more information. It's much nicer looking, and it's, of course, it's done by Apple. So to get access to Control Center, you swipe up from the bottom of the screen, and at the top you have a bunch of toggles for things like airplane mode, turning on and off Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, do not disturb mode, turning on and off the rotation lock. You have a brightness controller. You have a now playing screen, so you can see what's playing, do play pause, fast forward, volume control. You have your AirPlay controls there. And one of my most favorite things, again, this is something I jailbreak for, is the ability to have a flashlight very quickly handy. They have a little flashlight button, so that turns on the LED on the back of the phone.
Apple Sherlocked the flashlight apps.
Yeah, they Sherlocked the flashlight apps. They Sherlocked quite a few apps, actually, and we'll get into that as we go. But they also have a quick access to the camera, which is awesome, because I'm sure many people, like I have, done this where I'm doing something on my phone and I realize I want to take a picture real fast, and I turn off my phone, turn it back on, and then use the quick swipe up gesture to get to my camera.
Sure.
So they have that built in, as well as a calculator and timer, although I'm not sure if those buttons will be customizable. If they're not, they might be in iOS 8. Not that I've heard anything. I'm just pulling things out of my butt.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's what we do usually on the show.
Right.
We just have a lot less need to do that today.
Right. Yeah, you know, Well, for me, a lot of it comes back to this is a beta.
Yep.
And a lot of things that I'm looking at in the interface today, where I'm thinking, man, I don't know about that, I'm assuming will change by the time this actually ships.
Yeah, so let's get into that before we go on to new features, because there are a lot of really cool features, and I want to get the poo-pooing out of the way. And I'm glad that I was able to get you on, Jeff, because you're the other designer here. And I guess, Adam, you're also a designer too, huh?
Yeah,
in your spare time.
Yeah.
So my biggest complaint, more than anything else possible in this operating system, is that they seem to have forgotten entirely the importance of contrast to support readability. I've seen so many screenshots, even on Apple's website, but from other people and in the iOS simulator, where there is a background on the home screen or something interfering with the frosted white panels, and you have white text, it makes it almost impossible to read. And of course, on iOS 6 and below, where you can set backgrounds, the way they solve this is very easily is they add a nice heavy drop shadow on the text, which makes it very easy to read. But because of this new direction, they're making everything much flatter, and they have obviously foregone drop shadows, at least on the springboard and also on the control center panels and a lot of other panels. It's not as big an issue on notification center, but it is a big issue in other places.
The choice of font is, it's a beautiful font, and I like it a lot, the look of it a lot, but by the same token, because it's so thin, that does not help the issue at all either.
Yeah.
Right. You know, a perfect example of that is in the new weather app. If you look at the default image they show on Apple's webpage where it's a sunny day, the type almost gets lost in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I would say the redeeming factor that exists is what they have done with the type system on iOS 7. They've moved to a radically different way of displaying type. And I'm not just talking about Helvetica. But that is, of course, the font that they did choose. But the way that they encourage developers to specify what font to use has changed dramatically to support some really great accessibility options and to provide a more consistent look. I believe it is called dynamic type. And the way that it was explained to me was that based on the size of text, doing certain things to the treatment of the font provides better readability. So if you have a very large font, let's say in the weather application where it's showing you the temperature, it's a very large display so that you can easily read what the temperature is at a glance. They make the font much thinner. And as you go down in size, they actually thicken up the font to make it more legible. So to some degree, they have definitely thought about legibility, but I would say not all the way, because with the new folders, because you can have pages in the new folders, which is awesome. I think they said that you can store hundreds of applications in app folders now, so you don't have like games 1, games 2, games 3, that kind of thing happening. There are the little dots at the bottom that indicate the pages, and I had a white background on my springboard, and I couldn't see the dots. They just were gone.
That's not a good sign.
And the same deal in... So they forego a lot of outlining as well. So when I saved a white image to my photo application, you can't even see it. You can't tell where it is. You just have to guess based on the fact that there's an empty box that's where it is.
But again, this is stuff they could easily deal with as well. Like, they could take an average of a, say you pick a background image, they could take an average of that and then adaptively apply either a darkening or heavier drop shadows. Or, I mean, there's ways to manage this. So I have a feeling as they're working through this design system, which really they've only had about 7 months to develop,
right,
that they're going to recognize and sort of tweak some of the, these are some of the small tweakable things that I think that we'll see happening. You know, so they can take my background image and go, oh, wow, it's got a lot of white and light colors to it. We're going to adjust the system. Well, or even adaptively, I don't know if you could convert the font. I don't think they'd go as extreme as converting, like, the font and the color palette to be a dark versus a light. But, I mean, even going that far, they could, you know, say, hey, if you're going to pick a light background, we're going to invert it, sort of invert the color scheme to a dark one.
They actually do
a light one. I don't think they'll take it that far, but
well, they actually do that. They, if you have a generally lighter background, they do change the font to a black font on the springboard. But if it's a situation where you have a photo that the average color is not light enough to for the system to trigger that, then it becomes an issue, or it would be an issue in the reverse as well. If you had a lot of contrasting color in there, we have a lot of dark and a lot of light in different areas, then you could have issues. So I think that hopefully they'll just, I mean, I guess the easy solution is drop shadows, and maybe Apple will do that, or maybe they'll do something more creative. We'll have to wait and see. I just hope they solve it.
I hope so too. No. Because overall, I think this is a good step forward, but there are some rough edges that need to be polished up.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, did you have any other bones to pick before we head on to some happy stuff?
Some of the transparency effects, I think, make readability difficult. Places where they chose to use icons to signify what you do as opposed to using text, I can't find any consistency or rhyme or reason to why they do one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there's some issues reading type, and I do have some other issues, but they don't matter right now, because I think some of the things that have been bothering me are because it's beta.
Yeah. Well, and sure, that does exist, but in the past, there have been certain things like this that are complaints, and you think, okay, they're just going to fix it because it's beta. Sometimes they don't fix that, so what I have become accustomed to doing is filing bug reports with Apple, and they do follow up on those, and they do look at every single one of them. So I plan on filing my own bug report, and if you're irritated by anything in iOS 7, I don't think you even need a developer account to file a bug.
No, I don't think you do.
I think it's, what is it, bugreports. Yeah, bugreport.apple.com, and you just sign in with your Apple ID, and you can plug a bug in there. Well, and as long as you follow their rules for filing a bug, then they will look at it.
But technically, you do need a developer account to install iOS 7.
That is true. So maybe you say, based on screenshots I have seen, ...
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Based on rumors. So, moving on to a lot of fun stuff. We should talk about multitasking, which is really cool. There's a new UI. So, in order to bring that up, because the notification or the control center has been separated from the double click thing, so where you would get the music controls and you swipe over. Now, of course, that's separated. So multitasking is the only thing you're going to get when you double-click your home button, and that will show a pretty significantly different user interface where you see actual previews of the applications, and you can scroll back and forth to see them. It's a very Palm WebOS look, and in fact, you can actually quit applications by swiping up, which is pretty neat.
Yes, I think this is a much more intuitive way to deal with all the apps that are open on your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because before it was double tap and then tap and hold, swipe through to find what you want while everything's jiggling, then hit the no entry button.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was not a good design choice.
Right. In addition to the new UI, they've actually extended multitasking for applications. They said that they are bringing multitasking to all applications, and I think it's a bit misleading. So the way that they're doing it is actually very cool, because of course the thing that they've wanted to do all along with multitasking is provide the sort of information that you would expect from a multitasking application, from an app that is still running in the background without sacrificing battery life or performance. And what they have done is quite a few things. One, they call intelligent scheduling. So they talk about apps that you use often. So if you open Facebook a lot, or if you open a news application a lot, periodically update those applications for you. So they notice that you use certain applications often, and they try to update those more often in the background. So as the apps are in their suspended state, as they are now, they wake them up occasionally to provide more information to you. They also have opportunistic updates. So whenever you flick on your phone to see what time it is, or to check something real quick, they use that as an opportunity to update certain applications. So because you already have it on, why not take advantage of that? They also figure out that if you use an application at a certain range of time, so in the morning when you wake up, you look at all your news applications, they'll actually preemptively wake those up and pull in some extra data, so that will be fresh and more responsive for you when you go into it. They adapt to network conditions so that it fetches data when the network is good. They have things called coalesced updates, which I believe updates apps at the same time other apps are being updated, so it takes advantage of the fact that your phone's already doing stuff, that sort of thing. And I think really cool is push triggers. So whenever you get a push notification, if you've ever noticed that when you follow a push notification into an application, it takes a moment for it to update, especially like with applications like Facebook. If you get a notification like that, it takes a moment for the interface to update, or in other applications as well. So when you get a push notification in your application, it actually takes that opportunity to update the state of the application in the background, so you get much more responsive experience.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that there are a lot of changes that have been made to improve overall performance. There we go.
Yeah, and snappiness. Apparent snappiness.
Yes, because even if it's not really snappy, but Apple can create the illusion of that, in many cases, that's good enough, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
At least from the average user's perspective.
Yep. So that's multitasking. In the camera, they have added filters, as we talked about before. But I think more interesting than the filters that they've added, and it's sort of in the way that they did iChat filters on the Mac, or photo booth filters. So you can do filters with video and with photos. They also have the ability to do a cropped photo, so a square photo. And I think the best part about the camera app is that they've changed the UI to incorporate all of the stuff that they've added over the years, so that now the way you access the different types of photos or videos that you can take, you just scroll left, right to select the thing that you want. So it just has a list of standard photo, cropped photo, video, or panorama. And I think it makes it
much more discoverable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, and it adds in consistency with many other interface elements where you're swiping to perform tasks anyhow.
Yep. They now have AirDrop, which I think is going to be awesome for iOS users. So we did talk about that as a rumor briefly, but now that we know what it is, the it allows you to, it seems that you can share just about anything in iOS that you could share via SMS or mail, you can share with AirDrop. And AirDrop is, on the iPhone, it's a peer-to-peer thing, so you don't need to be on the same network. It discovers other iOS users around you. If they're in your address book, they'll be able to see you, and you can actually toggle it on and off with your control center to so that other people who aren't in your address book can also AirDrop things to you. So you can AirDrop photos or videos or documents, whatever you need to do. And I thought it was really fun that he actually said, you know, if you want to send it to multiple people, you don't have to go around the room doinking it on people's phones.
Yeah, I wonder what that was targeting.
What's that, Adam? Yeah.
I said, is that the technical term, doinking?
Yeah, I think that's a technical term. Or I don't know, smacking other people's phones with your phone, a phone smack?
Well, at least it's not squirting.
Yeah. Well, no, now it is squirting.
So no.
It's kind of taking
Michael,
me...
it will never be squirting.
Okay, and it will to me. But it's, I think that's awesome because, I mean... Firstly, they've Sherlocked quite a few things. They Sherlocked bump, and you don't even have to bump now because it just uses the peer-to-peer stuff, and you can do multiple people. You can send links to people. You can send... I mean, I'm going to love this. I send stuff to people all the time. Typically, it's links or locations, that sort of stuff. This is going to be ultra handy, I think.
Did they give us a sense of how this works on the receiving side? So if you send me, say, a PDF document, is it going to jump up on my phone and say, Michael's sending you a PDF? I would assume the way it would work is it's going to say, Michael's sending you a PDF, and then give me the open with option and then look for available apps on my device that I can open that file with?
I would think so. I think that it's probably just the same thing that when you attach... any sort of file to an email and you can tap on it, it'll load it up and say, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Yeah. So of course, like I said, you can send photos, videos, contacts, you can send passbook passes, which is awesome. So if you buy movie tickets for a friend, you can send those tickets over to him. It is peer-to-peer connectivity, so it's actually available to developers. There's an SDK, so they can utilize the peer-to-peer technology that they're using with AirDrop to do whatever they want with it, which is great.
Yes, I'm picturing being able to use that at like trade shows and conferences, and someone makes a graphic they need to send to me, or I need to give them some text or whatever. And you just AirDrop it real fast.
Yeah, I wonder if you can AirDrop to Macs. Did they mention that at all? To and from a Mac? That would be really handy.
They did not, but if that's not in there, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
Right.
So Safari has been, well, all the applications, I should say, all the Apple apps have been updated and significantly changed, at least... visually, Safari has been changed pretty substantially. I think that, again, there are a few dumb things about it, like the bar at the top. It kind of screws up some sites, but we won't focus on that. So there's the new UI. There's a new tab interface, which doesn't limit you to 8 tabs now, which is very cool.
And I call that the Rolodex interface.
Yeah, it looks like a Rolodex of all your of all the sites that you have open.
Yeah.
And to get rid of them, you can swipe them over to the left, and you go down a little bit further, and you can see all of your iCloud synced tabs, which is nice. You can access private mode right from there, so you don't have to jump into settings to turn on private mode.
Huh.
I've never turned on private mode, so I don't know why I would do that. But
same here. And I'm just wondering how many people that work at Apple found that to be enough of an issue for them that this needed to be a feature.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's for all your friends at Starbucks, Jeff.
Yeah. Hey, they've been reading your blog.
Yeah. Well, clearly there's a few people that haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the people that you write about.
Right.
So they also have kind of a top sites view now in Safari, which I think is really cool because I use top sites all the time on my Mac. It's that little interface with the grid with all the sites that you go to frequently. So when you go up to the address bar, and it is also a unified address bar, I should say, so you can search and do your addresses from that bar, and it does Google searching right from there with suggestions from Google as well as suggestions from your history and all that good stuff, just as it is on Safari. I think that'll be great.
You know, I would like there to be a feature where I could enable or disable the unified field, because I know for a lot of people this really makes sense and it's really a smart thing to do. For me, there are many times when I want to specifically search or specifically enter a URL, and I don't want any of my devices to have to guess which I'm doing.
Yeah, I've run into that quite a few times, and it takes a little bit to manually tell it what to do. So it is kind of a pain in that way.
Yeah.
But you know, they're not going to let you do it.
This is going to make web surfing much easier for the majority of people. So it's just something that I have to accept.
Yeah. So they've updated the App Store as well. They added a feature called Apps Near Me, which could very well be a nice feature for discovering applications. So I assume what they do is somehow broadcast what app you're using at a system level so that people can figure out what other people are using. So I assume that's an opt-in or out sort of thing. But, you know, if you're at a shopping mall and there could be some useful apps for you, or you're at a museum and or in some big city and walking downtown and checking stuff out, it would suggest apps that could potentially be useful for you to do that. And very nice, they've added auto updating to the App Store, so now you don't have to do that ADD thing where you open up the App Store just to see if there are apps available to update and go ahead and update them. So it does that or it does it automatically for you, but you can switch it off so it does it manually.
You know, one thing I would love, because I'm apparently just a beat behind you at this moment, with the App Store part where it shows you what apps are nearby, wouldn't it be cool if there was a way that you could broadcast an app without having to actually have a device with it on? And I'm thinking back to what you said, museums. So I walk into the museum and I just get a little notification that pops up and says Denver Museum of Nature and Science has their own app.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I wonder, you got to wonder if there's an API available to do that.
That would be really cool, because if there is, and you know, pretty much every place has Wi-Fi, so they can just be broadcasting something like that all the time.
Right.
I can see where that would be really a compelling feature. I can also see where people would get really pissed off. And every time I go in the store, I get a stupid notice that says I need an app.
Well, I think that you have to actually go into the App Store and click on the Near Me button.
Oh, so you can't get notifications for Near Me.
Right. As far as I know.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was a great idea while it lasted.
Well, I think it still is a good idea. They can do it many different ways. You can do it in a way that you don't even need to have hardware at your store. So maybe it's hooked into Apple Maps, into their database. Maybe you say that you're close to Kohl's and they have a an application. And when you're actually near there, when it looks at the map data, then it knows that it should show you that app.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot more to talk about, like tons more to talk about. But before we do that, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, which is Audible. And that's at audiblepodcast.com/WHC. You can get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial at that URL. If you don't know what Audible is, it's crazy that you don't know what it is, but they're awesome. And I love them. Personally, I've used them for many years to get audiobooks. So, of course, they're the best place to get audiobooks and other spoken word audio information and entertainment. They have a library now of over 100,000 titles that you can purchase. Additionally, the books can be purchased at a substantially reduced price using credits that you get when you subscribe to one of the Audible listener programs. And that's how I've done it in the past. And it's actually, I think it's really fun to do it that way, because in addition to the price cut that you get by doing it that way, you get your couple credits every month. So every month when it rolls over, it says, hey, you have one credit or two credit or three credits, whatever you signed up for. And those will accumulate up to 6 credits. And so when you're ready to get another book, I almost always have a credit available to get that next book that I want to get on Audible. And they pretty much have everything that you could ever think about. So they have business, classics, fiction, history, romance, mysteries, sci-fi and fantasy, self-help, which is really cool because you can sit there and listen to like David Allen's Getting Things Done and maybe fall asleep at the wheel. Trust me, I've done it a couple, not fallen asleep at the wheel, but I've listened to that book on while in the car and I thought maybe I should switch to something else because I'm a little tired. But I mean, it's good because if it's in a book that you have to read, I think that you're going to put that thing down a lot more quickly than you're going to put down an audiobook. So obviously you're already listening to a podcast. You're already used to listening to things that are spoken word. Audible is awesome for people who love doing that stuff. And that way you can get a lot more reading done when you're in the car, when you're working out, working around the house, whatever. I love doing it this way because I get more reading done and I get more stuff done at the same time. So this week I just finished the book that the movie Limitless was based on. It's called The Dark Fields by Alan Glynn. I searched for it, but so that was the name of it before it was Limitless in the movies. And I searched for it. I couldn't find it. It's now called Limitless by Alan Glynn, but it is the original Dark Fields book. And even if you have seen the movie, honestly, I watched the movie a year or two ago, loved it. And I think I watched it again recently. And then I read the book and I really loved it. It's a significantly different story, but at the same time, it also maintains a lot of the same elements. Of course, it's the story of a guy who gets a hold of this experimental drug that gives him extraordinary powers of thought and ability to process information and recall information and do stuff. So he immediately starts doing stock day trading and making tons of money. And then he realizes that there's a problem with what he's doing. And I won't spoil the book for you or the movie if you haven't already seen it or read it, but that it's a really fun book. It's really nice. So it's called Limitless by Alan Glynn. That is my pick of the week. And so if you want to get this book for free, it's usually $30. And if you have Audible Listener, you get the free trial. I think, do you remember how much the listener membership is? Oh, it's, I ask and I know what it is. $7.50 for the first 3 months after that. And then it's $15 a month. So obviously you're getting it at half price when you have those credits, and you have different levels that you can sign up for and get the credits every month and they accumulate and all that good stuff. So you can get that book or any other book on Audible. They're going to give you any book that is one credit, and almost every one is one credit. So audiblepodcast.com/WHC, that'll give you the free book. And the great thing about Audible is no matter what, you can cancel and you keep that book. So they'll want your credit card, of course, because you're assuming that you're going to continue because it's an awesome service, but you can keep that book. And if you cancel at any time in the future, 6 months, a year from now, you keep that giant library of books that you accumulate. So I have a huge library of books, and some of them I have not listened to yet, and I still have them. They have an awesome iOS application that gives you full access to your library. You can download any books at any time. You can download over cellular. You can listen to them. They have a bunch of cool skip forward and back controls. And they even have quite a few books that sync with Amazon text Kindle books. So that if you listen a little bit here on Audible, then you can, it'll actually sync it up where you read on your Kindle app. And you can go back and forth, and it syncs, which is awesome. So, because it's an Amazon company. So check it out, audiblepodcast.com/WHC. We thank them so much for their sponsorship of We Have Communicators. So with that, iCloud Keychain, it's an awesome feature. It's not one that we haven't seen before, though, because we used to be able to... We used to be able to sync our keychains between our Macs using MobileMe and what was it before?
.Mac. And then iTools.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but it takes it even further.
It does.
I feel bad for the folks at AgileBits.
I feel bad for the 1Password guys. Yeah, because they've been pretty well Sherlocked at this point. And
I think you're completely wrong.
Okay, well, let me say what it does, and then you can tell us why they haven't been Sherlocked.
Okay.
Because I love their product. I use it all the time now. So what iCloud Keychain does is syncs your keychain. So on your Mac, of course, it saves all of your passwords, which is really great because you don't have to remember your password. And it syncs across the Macs, and now it will sync to your iOS devices, which is great. But now... with iCloud Keychain, and this is really the reason why people are saying that they've been Sherlocked, is Keychain has always been able to create strong passwords for you, but it's never provided an interface for ad hoc sort of creation of your passwords or suggestion of passwords. It's something that you would have to very specifically go out of your way to do. So now when you're going and signing up for something, it will, Safari on Mavericks, or on your iOS 7 devices, will suggest really secure passwords for you and automatically fill that out for you. It will also store your credit card information for you so that whenever you're ordering something on Amazon or what have you, it will automatically populate that information for you. However, you have to remember your credit card security code, which is something that you don't have to do with 1Password, but you have to remember your 1Password code. So I would say, you know, this is like 1Password for your mom, because you don't have to worry about it. It's included already. It automatically suggests strong passwords for you. And when your mom is going to sign up for something and Safari says, hey, we have a really secure password for you right here, we'll suggest it for you. It'll be different from everything else, nice and unique and secure, and we'll save it and sync it across all your devices so you don't have to remember it. Do you want to do this? And she'll say, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. And ta-da, it works just like that. And I think it's great. I'm really happy about it because go ahead.
I was just going to say, before Jeff gets into his thing, I'll just, you know, for me, the thing that sort of makes it Sherlock 1Password, and I'm fully ready for Jeff to discount this, and I hope he can, is it's the integration. That's my biggest problem with 1Password, is that it's not integrated at an OS level, and Apple, that's the leg up that Apple has. The one huge feature that I won't be personally leaving 1Password, because I use it for my software and all my licensing for all my software. So that's the one thing I don't think Keychain is going to replace for me, and probably why I will stick with 1Password. But I'm with Michael. I think the vast majority of the public are going to opt for the free built-in thing that integrates really well and is just there. that makes sense. So I see 1Password being sort of relegated to those folks who are power users. So now, Jeff, tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay. So what you just said about 1Password will not be a tool for power users, I completely agree. Because there are so many things that you can do with 1Password that go beyond creating and doling out passwords.
Right.
There's also things that that I see as very limiting with iCloud Keychain. So if you're using this on your Mac and you want to use a browser other than Safari, it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
So
are you sure, though? Because I know Keychain works in like Chrome and Firefox and that too.
Well, okay, so I need to get a hold of a copy when it's appropriate for me to do so and check and see. But everything that I've seen and heard so far says that this is integrated into Apple's apps, but not other apps.
Okay.
The big problem I see is the system level integration, which on the Mac is not a problem. On the iPhone and iPad is a problem. Although that didn't kill Text Expander on iOS when Apple started doing their shortcuts thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that as a big problem ultimately there. But yeah, for a lot of people, they're going to use this, and it's what they have, and it'll be fine. It's also like with Time Machine. That didn't kill the backup software market. It just gave the average user that doesn't want to think about the technology issues that go along with a robust backup system. Now, all they have to do is plug in a hard drive and they're done. So the average user, this may be the right tool for them. For someone that needs more, and there are a lot of us out there that need more, 1Password gives us that extra level of management. It gives us cross-platform syncing, so you can have the same database on Android and Windows if you need, and you can store a lot more information in there. Like Adam says, he stores his information for application purchases. Okay, I do the same thing. I also have other information stored away in there that I need on a regular basis, like bank account information, my passport information tucked away in there. And it's all secured away with an interface that's very easy to use for looking at all of that information. I mean, if you really want, you can go and start putting all that other stuff into Keychain. But the interface is not that good, and it's not designed to be used in that way, really. So there are enough features still that a lot of people are relying on, and I don't see 1Password going away. But yes, for the average user, the muggles out there, this is going to be a great option.
Yeah. Well,
let's be honest. I mean, if we're really being honest about it, with people I know who are that average, quote unquote, average user, that muggle user, they're not using 1Password today anyway.
Right.
So it maybe doesn't really change 1Password's market all that much. And so I'm sort of with you there, Jeff. I mean, I use Secure Notes. That's another feature. And like you said, you can do that with OS X Keychain, but it's really not approachable in terms of an interface, not in the way that 1Password makes it approachable.
No, not at all.
Right. So, yeah, I know a lot of people are looking at it going, oh, it's been Sherlocked. Text Expander didn't get Sherlocked. With the changes that have been made to calendars, Fantastical is not getting Sherlocked. And backup apps didn't get Sherlocked. So what I see here is that Apple has looked at the needs people have, and for people that won't go out and take care of those needs themselves, they found an easy way to make it happen for them.
Yeah, and that's really good, because that brings up the ultimate security for all of their users. And you know, there have been many times where I've thought, I should really get my mom to use 1Password. And then I think, no, that'll be a nightmare for me.
She's never gonna use it.
Yeah, or yeah, because it's just it's going to be too much for her to think about. But with this, it'll be something that's very obvious and built in, and she might actually end up using it, which that's the goal.
Let's be honest, though, she's probably not. I mean, if she's at all like my wife, I mean, I've tried to get my wife to use 1Password as well, and she's never going to do it. And I'm not even convinced that she'll use the new keychain feature either.
Right, yeah. It might say, hey, we've got this crazy password for you, and then she goes, why would I want to use that? I'll never be able to remember that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I already know.
Might even be a moot point.
I already know my password. Why would I want to put it in there? Yeah. What do you mean your password? Well, if I have different passwords, how am I going to remember how to log in on my sites? Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a larger conversation. I mean, we probably should talk about the fact that this whole term Sherlock, right, which goes way, way back to, the Sherlock application in Watson, for those who remember history. Apple does a really good job of providing a base level of functionality. I think that's what we're getting at here, right? This is a base level of functionality that's going to be appropriate for a large number of users. But the opportunity—they always seem to leave this opportunity for third-party developers like AgileBits to take that one step further and go above and beyond. And so this is a great opportunity for somebody like AgileBits to look at their software, an area where they've really had a pretty good, my understanding, majority share of the market. I know there's other things like the KeePass, and there's a few other applications that do things similar. But 1Password has sort of been the application when you talk to most people in this community about, you know, a password manager.
Right.
And so now they have a great opportunity to sort of go, okay, Apple's providing this level. Where are all the areas we can now go? We're already doing above and beyond in several areas. Where can we improve our product? So I think it pushes everybody forward as well. So there's a lot of good that comes out of, you know, being quote unquote Sherlocked.
I agree. Yeah.
So, ultimately, I think iCloud Keychain is an excellent addition. It's very good. iTunes Radio, we talked about
Wait,
it.
Do we have on our list the activation locking? I don't want to jump ahead, but it seems like since we're on security.
Yeah, okay, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about iTunes Radio in a second. So, did you want to introduce how activation lock works, Adam?
Yeah, so basically this ends up being a theft deterrent, something that several people have been critical of Apple. We know that over the past few years, Apple products have become a highly prized target for thieves. And a lot of people have always said, oh, well, why can't I go into the Apple store and tell them, you know, not to lock or to let me know if someone tries to activate my device, or why can't I go to AT&T or whoever my carrier is and just say, hey, don't let them activate or notify me. Or a lot of people want Apple to be responsible for telling authorities to, you know, when they see a new device come on that's been stolen. Like, why can't I report to Apple? My device has been stolen. If you see it activated, you know, notify the police. And Apple's always maintained, well, that's not really our business. And I think that's rightly so. But this latest edition, it gives you the ability now, or I guess it's going to be, I'm assuming it's default. I don't know quite yet. I'll have to look into it a little bit more. Maybe you guys know. But in essence, it puts an activation lock on your device. So if your device gets lost or stolen, and do you have to be using Find My iPhone for this to work? Do you guys know?
I'm not sure. That wasn't clear to me from the keynote.
Yeah. The idea, though, is that you cannot reactivate a device. So once you've activated it on the cellular network, you cannot reactivate it without your Apple ID, your registration. So that means it becomes a really good theft deterrent, or actually not even so much a theft deterrent, but it's gonna kill the secondary market, because people are going to recognize iPhones. If I buy a cheap iPhone off the street from some shady dude now, I have a good chance that I'm not going to be able to use that as a phone at all, because I'm going to go to activate it, and they're going to say, well, what's your Apple ID to activate this device on AT&T? And they're not going to have that information.
Right.
So it'll take a little bit of time, but eventually thieves are going to go, well, I don't want to steal an iPhone because I can't sell that thing, because the secondary, you know, sort of illicit market is going to know that they have good odds they're not going to be able to use that device. So it devalues the devices on that sort of shady the black market. And so ultimately that's good for end users because it's going to mean less thieves are going to want to steal iPhones because they know they're not going to be able to sell them. So I think it's overall, it's a very good step that Apple's taking, and it's one that doesn't involve Apple having to get really involved in the whole process of tracking down phones and sort of maintaining things. So I think it's a good happy medium between, you know, how they can increase theft security but not have to be sort of a cop or a policeman.
Yeah. Now, one thing I wasn't clear on, they talked about how you can even remotely erase your phone, or the person who took it can erase the phone, or try to turn off Find My iPhone. I get that if they try to turn off Find My iPhone, you don't have a passcode lock on there. They won't be able to do that without your iCloud password, which is awesome. But it seems
It's an activation thing.
Yeah, and so if you, I guess that gives us the answer whether or not you have to Find My iPhone on. I think you do.
Sounds like you do. Yeah.
So you can remotely erase your phone, but even if you do the remote erase, you can, it still won't activate without your Apple ID and password. And
correct.
I'm not sure if you can still track your phone once you do the remote erase.
I doubt that you can, but, you know, at least you know that. I don't know how this has nothing to do with phone recovery, I guess is what it gets at. This is
right. This is a deterrent.
Deterrent so that people don't want to steal iPhones anymore.
Right. And that's awesome.
It devalues the secondary market.
Yep.
So if they can't get premium, if you can't sell the phone that you steal, if you can't fence it, then there's no point in stealing it in the first place, I think is the idea here.
Right. Now, I can see where there'd still be a market if, and I know this is a stretch, but if people wanted parts to fence.
Yeah, parts it out.
Yeah, you could part it out, and the display would still be usable, maybe the battery and some other components.
But that would be not be something you want to get into.
Yeah, that's I can't imagine that being a lucrative market.
But
and plus, you know, more Samsung phones are out there, so maybe you just want to.
Okay, now here's the funny thing.
More Samsung phones.
Yeah, someone at some point will use the drop in iPhone thefts as proof that people have lost interest in the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be fun. So, we should talk about
iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes Radio. My note on here is it awesome?
Maybe.
I think it's awesome that I was partly right about the it being baked into iTunes Match in sort of a way.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. As an iTunes Match customer, to know that right out of the gate, I'm going to get iTunes Radio and I'm not going to have to get ads. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's freemium, so if you don't subscribe to iTunes Match, you get it for free as well. You just have ads interstitially. Those are audio ads, correct?
I would assume so. I hope they don't do the video ad thing. It's in essence Pandora. So
right.
This is another, hey, Pandora just got Sherlocked, but they really did. But, you know, since we're using that term, let's just say that they did.
Yeah.
So it works like that. I hope they don't do the video ad thing because I think that's just dangerous. I use Pandora. I like Pandora a lot, but when the video ads come on, even though I know not to look at my screen, it's still distracting. Yeah. I have my screen sort of next to me in the car, and a video ad comes on, and it's like a car wreck. It's hard not to look.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine Apple wouldn't do that. It doesn't make sense to them, I would guess. So the way that it works is very much like Pandora. They have a bunch of different radio stations that you can choose from by default. They also have, if you liked such and such artist, you might like kind of stations. Like if you like Daft Punk, or they have ones like Decade of iTunes, or you can make songs based or make stations based on songs or artists. Now, one of the things that I saw that I would say is probably unique to iTunes Radio is that you have a little slider in there called Tune This Station. So whenever you make a new station, you have a slider that goes on one side from top hits to mix all the way to discovery. So it sort of allows you to tune what you want out of your radio station. If you want it to be a discovery thing, then you slide it all the way over. But if you're just like, I want to hear, you know, a bunch of like Daft Punk, I want to hear Daft Punk and related stuff, and, you know, just give me all the top hits of that sort of genre, then that's what they'll play for you. But if you want discovery, then you can also do that. It seemed initially from the slides in the keynote that Genius was going to be integrated into this, but it turns out that Genius is just next to it because iTunes Radio is just part of the music app in iOS 7. So it doesn't look like they're going to be doing any fancy discovery stuff based on your music yet, but
that would be cool if they added that in. I mean, if they know what music you already like, being able to generate playlists based on your tastes sounds like a really cool thing.
Yeah, or playlists based on playlists, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Or genres. I guess you could probably do a genre playlist. But genres are too loose now. So, but it,
yeah.
I mean, they have it, it's built in, it's free. And so I think that it has some real promise. You can't pull up songs by name, though. You can't just tell it, I want to listen to this album and play it through. It's very Pandora-like.
Not Spotify.
Right, exactly. The other details from that is you get 6 skips out of it, so you can skip up to 6 songs every hour. Supposedly, it resets every hour. They have a nice listen history, too, so you can see what you've listened to, which I think is a very nice feature. FaceTime now has audio calls, so if you're on Wi-Fi only, you can do an audio FaceTime call, which is kind of a contradiction, but hey, it works.
And if you have a minute cap on your cell phone plan, well, there you go. That's another way to save some minutes.
Yeah. Maps has been redesigned minorly, I would say. Of course, they have a night mode, so it's based on time or ambient light conditions. They have bookmark syncing, so across all of your iOS devices, you can have your bookmarked locations synced as well as into Mavericks, because Mavericks now has its own Maps app. And I would say one of the coolest things between the integration of Mavericks and iOS 7 is when you're looking at something on your Mac, if you're trying to plan out a trip where you're going to go, you can actually send a location or a route to your iOS device so that when you slide to unlock your device, you're taken right to the route and it'll start taking you to where you wanted to go, which is very cool.
Finally.
Yes, finally. How long have I been bitching about that not being there?
All the time. The whole time.
Pretty much the whole time.
Yeah. You also get turn-by-turn walking directions, which is nice. I thought they had that in there already, but I guess they didn't.
They have that now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
Nothing about transit, though. Or is transit still in the third-party apps, right? That was Apple's approach. Or
I imagine it's still third-party. They'll probably bring it.
I'm hoping that's one of the forestalled things that they will undo at some point.
I imagine so. It doesn't make sense the way it is now, so. Siri has been updated, but she doesn't have as much Google Now sort of stuff as we were hoping for. She can do more things, though. She can answer questions using Bing, which is kind of strange, as well as Wikipedia.
That's not strange at all.
No?
Is that strange?
Yeah, I said it's strange.
Who else were they going to go to? They're not going to go to Google. I'm just happy that the default search in, I think the default search in Safari still seems to be Google.
Yeah, it is.
But Siri's default search is now Bing. So whether or not that'll change in the future, but I never figured they would go to Google for Siri integration.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The only other player choice is Microsoft and Bing.
Yep. So, and I believe it will. Do you know if it reads, like if you say, who is Adam Christensen, and it pulls up your Wikipedia, will it actually read from Wikipedia, or do you have to look at the screen?
I do not know.
Okay. Have you heard anything?
And it wouldn't work for that anyway, since there's no Wikipedia for Maccast or Adam Christensen, since I got pulled by some dude.
Oh, lame. You can
if anybody
also
wants to change that, I'm just going to throw that out there now. If anybody wants to resubmit and throw that out there.
Yeah, get our,
I need somebody to
get our wikis up there.
I need a Wikipedia expert to go in and get my records restored.
Yeah. You can also pull up Twitter stuff, which I don't know who the hell's going to do that. Tell me what my friends are doing on Twitter, and you're going to get a bunch of nonsense, but maybe that'll be useful.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
I'm really happy about the web thing. I mean, it was really stupid that you couldn't do the web thing. I'm hoping you can do the image thing, too. Do you happen to know if you can do, when you ask for images, and actually get images in Siri or in Siri interface rather than having to go to the web?
So you're saying give me images of the Eiffel Tower kind of thing?
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah. I hope that's in there.
Yeah. You can control system options, which is pretty cool. So you can say, hey, Siri, turn off Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. She'll say, okay, cool, I'll do that.
That's awesome.
See, that's fracking awesome.
Yeah, because pretty much every time I hop in my car, I want that to happen. And if I can just tell her to do that for me, awesome. Now, I wonder if it'll do things like, if I can say, like a series of things that I want it to do. So I say, hey, turn off Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and start playing this album. That would be nice.
Hey, FYI, sorry to jump in, but being remote as I am, I plugged in my iPhone to my car at this point, and I'm at 3% battery life, and it's still going down even though I'm plugged into the charger.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your car need to be on?
No, it's on. Believe me, it's on. I've got a power inverter and I'm plugged into the iPhone charger.
Oh, yikes.
But I guess the phone is draining the battery faster than it can recharge.
Yikes. Okay.
Well, that's part of the magic of beta.
I guess we'll talk to you if you drop out. But so what else? What are we on here? So they have more voices in Siri. So you got a man in addition to a more easy to understand lady.
Yeah, it's more lifelike and more realistic.
The guy's voice sounds like the guy that's on Apple's answering service when you call like My Apple or tech support. Sounds like that guy. And they have other language as well, other languages. And they didn't really talk about it, but there are options to edit queries. So when you say something to Siri, like, I don't know. I don't know how well it'll work out. I haven't played with this personally, but I would imagine if you do things like play audio video disco and she goes, I'm sorry, I can't play videos, then you hit the little edit thing. Actually, that might not help with one of those. Maybe it's something that helps with things that she didn't hear properly. So if you have some kind of strange inflection that she doesn't understand, then you can edit it and she'll, I assume, learn from that in the future.
Let me throw out a tip here for people who use Siri. A lot of people don't know that if you're dictating a text or something to Siri, you can say, change it. If she gets it wrong, so if you know if she reads back your text and she messed something up, you can say change it.
Yeah.
You can also say add to it. So if you get cut off early and you need to add.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. You can say add to it and she will append stuff to the end of your message.
I'm usually too busy telling her to change it 5 times before I actually pull it out of my phone cradle and put it up to my face and then she
gets
it perfectly.
So if she says, ready to send it, you can say add to it.
Oh, cool.
It lets you see some more stuff.
Awesome. And there are a bunch of other...
for email, too. Sorry.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, and there are a bunch of other actions that you can do with Siri as well. So we'll have to see what comes out of that. But no Siri API.
No Siri API. And to be clear on my tip, that works with the current version of Siri. In case that wasn't clear. This isn't a new iOS 7.
Okay. Here. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No announced API, at least, right?
Honestly, I think they would have talked about it, but I've been drilling through sites and rumor places and the posted sessions online, and I watched the State of the Union platform address thingy that they have, and there was just no mention of it whatsoever. I don't think they're going to have any Siri APIs.
I'm at 1% now, so.
Okay.
We'll miss you when you're gone.
Yeah. So we'll talk about SpriteKit and game controllers, because that is one thing that they didn't really talk too much about, but I heard more about as the sessions went on. SpriteKit is a giant collection of APIs for developers who want to create 2D games. Have you seen anything about it, Jeff?
Just what they showed during the keynote, which is basically just talking about it. Now, the thing that for me was really cool about that is that it shows that Apple is now taking a serious interest in the gaming market.
Absolutely.
Before they had become receptive to that market.
Yeah.
But which was a huge step forward from what they'd been before. But now doing the SpriteKit thing, the game controller support, that's a big thing. Basically, what Apple's doing, I think, is telling the rest of the world, you know how popular the iPhone and the iPad and iPod Touch are? Oh, by the way, we are now your gaming console market.
Right.
And
I think it also signals that Apple is bringing games to the Apple TV. That's my theory, the whole game controller thing.
I can see it.
Game controllers.
Yeah, so they announced a... using the official iPhone or made for iPhone compatibility thing, they've added to it four distinct controller types. So they have standalone controllers that you can have so that you would be able to play using your Mac or your iPhone or your iPad or possibly your Apple TV. And then they have the wraparound type where you actually push your iPhone in there, and I'm guessing you could even push in an iPad if someone made a big one like that. But what they allow you to do, the two different distinctions from there are the standard, they would have a D-pad, four buttons, an LED display, and two shoulder buttons. But then they can extend it to having, in addition to that, you'd have two joysticks, an extra couple shoulder buttons, and some I guess not shoulder buttons, but they would be trigger buttons. So it'd be very extensible, and the benefit for that is to both developers and end users, because if developers are working on integrating third-party controllers into their applications, they don't want to have to worry about supporting each and every one. So if they have a standard set that they can support, then it makes it much easier. And the thing that totally rocks about this, and I think that it totally blows Nintendo out of the water, especially with the surround version on an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you get the ability to have that touch screen right in the center, right over the content, right over the game that you're playing. So you can use your D-pad and your joysticks and your buttons for most of the stuff. But if you want to do direct interaction stuff, then you go ahead and just touch the content as you would on your iPhone. And it makes for a very compelling gameplay scenario.
Yes. And compelling, I think that's the big word right there. Because when you can actually be looking right into what it is that you're playing, I think that helps make the game more immersive. And like I have Lego games for my Wii, Lego games for my iPad. I prefer them on my iPad because I am now looking down into the game and I get more wrapped up into what I'm doing.
Yep. And, you know, when you have games like that are first person shooters, it's just such a pain to be having your thumb stick to the screen, having such friction on the screen, or having to use the screen and cover things up with your fingers and that sort of thing. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I can only imagine how much more time I will lose being able to play Lego Batman when I can use a controller with my iPad, so my fingers aren't in the way.
Yeah. It's very cool. And of course, the Sprite Kit gives a lot of really cool things to developers to create 2D games. So if you're thinking about doing a game and it seems like an enormous task, Sprite Kit, I'm sure, would be a great way to start off if you're a developer who wants to get started in that sort of thing. It looks very cool. There have been a lot of other little changes that I'll just throw out. The clock icon is now live, so you can see the second hand as well as minute and hour hands running there on the icon. The Compass app now includes a level, which is awesome.
That's actually more than awesome. I think that's critical, because if you want to have truly accurate compass readings, you need to be able to hold your compass level.
Oh,
but then
yeah,
it's also handy for other things. You can use it as a level.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's about time.
Indeed. And it totally Sherlocks a bunch of stupid level apps, and I'm happy to have that happen. You can now scan to import Passbook passes. The extent of that, I'm not entirely sure about. Adam, have you heard anything about that?
I have not, no.
Okay, because I had a Walgreens card, and it was such a big pain in the butt to bring that in, and I wonder what the extensibility of that is, or if there are going to be APIs that they need to integrate, something like that. There's call, so phone call and message blocking, which is awesome. I typically give out my Google Voice number to people if they're anybody other than somebody I personally know, a human being. I give everybody my Google Voice number, because if anybody accidentally lets my number out there and sells it to Best Buy or Walmart or whoever makes those ads, then I can block them. And of course, Google takes care of the spam. But so now that, and I occasionally get that stuff anyway, so you'll be able to block that, those calls and messages on your iPhone. It seems like it is a network-based service, and not strictly a software thing. Have you guys heard anything about that?
I was assuming it was just a software-based thing.
Yeah, it looked like, based on some of the screenshots, that it might actually be a network-based thing, but they never talked about whether the carriers would have to support it or not. So, but if it's something that's in software, then I guess that gives you the added benefit of not having to worry about whether your carrier supports it.
Okay, and see, that's another reason for it to be just software-based, because if you don't need to rely on a carrier, then it's just there for everyone to use.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what else do we have here? Per app cellular data toggle. So you can, if there are some apps that you just don't want using cellular data, you can manually toggle them off so they can only use Wi-Fi data, which is awesome. Spotlight is now in a sort of different area. So you don't swipe over to the left anymore. You pull down on the icon, so you don't have to swipe all the way over to get access to Spotlight. So I guess you have the added convenience of that by just pulling down on the home screen on your icons to get access to Spotlight. Newsstand is now in its own application, and you can put it into folders, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mark all action in Mail, so you can mark all as read or delete all in Mail. And one of the really cool things that I noticed in Mail is that the swipe gesture, in addition to giving you a delete option, it also gives you a more actions option. So you can swipe over and have a very specific action happen on it. So if you like use Gmail, for example, and you do deleting, but you also do archiving, and you don't want just one action available to you when you swipe, that would be really cool.
You know, anything that reduces the number of actions I have to take to make something happen on my iPhone counts as cool.
Yep. All right. So with that, I've run out of things to talk about. Unless you guys have anything else you want to bring up. Adam, do you have anything before you disappear into the lack of battery?
Yeah, no, but I'm amazed at how long I've been sitting at 1%. So maybe the charging is keeping me at stasis.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so we'll try and make it through. I don't have a pick this week, and the show has run long already, so I think we'll skip picks. So if you guys already have them, then save them for next week.
Alrighty.
That sounds good to me.
So you can find our picks usually and our show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Review the show on iTunes, tell a friend. Send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. The phone number is 202-642-6667. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. And of course, get your free audiobook. If you haven't already tried Audible, it's risk-free. You got a 30-day trial, audiblepodcast.com/WHC. You can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at Jay Gamet on Twitter, and zazzle.com/Jay Gamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
As always, it's great, and I'm glad you didn't get blown away in tornadoes.
Yeah, it looks like some more storms are brewing, so that's why I'm a little bit, I'm moving a little faster than I was. So the sirens haven't gone off yet. What's that, Adam?
Stay safe out there.
Yeah, I'll try to. Yeah, we have a halo of protection around us, oddly enough. We always don't get hit by the crazy storms. So I'm banking on that. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com. He's at MacCast on Twitter. Member.MacCast.com is the member version of the show. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry again for the audio bit.
Hey, it's fine.
We're going gorilla here.
Yeah, and thanks to your family for letting you have some extra time to do the show this week.
Cool. Yeah, and I'll be back on the MacCast next week. So there was no show this week because I'm obviously on vacation, but we'll see everybody back there next week.
Yeah, cool. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter and at Get Appler as well as Appler's Twitter. Of course, check out Get Appler, GetAppler. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Fingers. Yuck. Their fingers. Yuck. 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 an internet communicator.